I got in a bike wreck. I didn't see a post directly in front of me until the last second. I hit the brakes, and then I flew over my handlebars. Like, because
that's not
of
good.
Physics.
Yes.
Yeah. And I landed just, like, solidly on my chest.
Ow.
My hand was blocking my chest. Like, my two hands, like, caught me. But it was also clearly on my ribs and stuff because, like, they hurt so bad.
That sounds so painful.
It's not so
fun. It was a bummer. Hi, I'm Richard Clark.
And I'm Bethany Perkins.
We can't stop talking about the Enneagram.
So we decided to start a podcast where we get it all out of our system.
We're not experts.
We're just obsessed.
It's No Chill Enneagram.
A safe space for Enneagram fanatics.
And a really dumb idea for a podcast. Hey everybody, I'm Richard Clark.
I'm Bethany Perkins.
Oh,
is that
and
what
we
I was
are
supposed to say?
No Chill Enneagram. We're supposed to just like chant at the same time we are No Chill Enneagram.
Oh, okay. Well, would have been nice to know that, but that's okay.
Next time we'll talk.
Okay.
Bethany, how's it going? Are you on? Are you going towards growth or towards stress?
I'm gonna say towards growth.
It feels like maybe you're going towards stress.
Why would you say that? Because we just heard you agonize for like 30 minutes straight over not being able to open iTunes. Like 11 minutes straight, but it's okay.
Okay.
I'm in stress currently, but overall I'm going towards growth.
Okay. Well, I think I'm sort of in growth, but as a four, I've been very helpful lately, and that means maybe I'm actually in stress and don't realize it. I also have another four on our show as our guest. We both do, actually. Her name is Aaliyah. Aaliyah Joy, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Are you growth or stress right now?
I think probably growth. It's been amusing to listen to you guys. I feel good.
Aaliyah has just been bemused by our, like, falling over ourselves trying to start a podcast.
Yeah,
recording.
It was my fault. It's fine.
Well, we're glad to have you. You've written a book that is coming out soon called Glorious Weakness, Discovering God in All We Lack.
Yes.
And I don't know, tell us like the elevator pitch on that.
It's sort of memoir driven, and it is an exploration of what it means to be poor in spirit.
Awesome.
So it's just looking at all of the areas that God meets us in, the areas that we're lacking, which is a very four. It's like basically the most four book ever.
Totally.
For written.
It totally is.
Well, before we get into it, I wanted to make sure we type reviews. This is something we've promised people we'll do, and we may one day regret it. Right now, we are getting close to regretting it because we have 39 reviews to type, though we've already typed five of them, so we're like halfway there.
Huge head start. Yeah.
Math is super hard.
But we wanted to start with one that we actually got today. Other than that, we'll go chronologically. But we got an amazing one today that
we
have to talk about. This is from Kenosis 5213.
Mm-hmm.
Bethany, you're going to read the reviews today. So why don't you just, like, I don't know, summarize it? It's pretty long. Should we read the whole thing?
How do I summarize it?
I don't know. Should we read the whole thing? What do we do?
I don't know. I don't know that we need to read the whole thing, but basically this person gave us 9 reasons why this is a hilarious... Oh, no. Why people need this podcast.
Yeah.
And they're type-based reasons, which is amazing. And they said...
And this is amazing because I didn't get this until, like... the third time I read it, because I read positive reviews several times in a row.
Yeah, we all do.
And the third time I read it, I was like, wait, everyone corresponds to the number.
Yes, super awesome. Just very complimentary. It may or may not have brought a little tear to my eye this morning.
Yeah. Number two is particularly good. It says,
yes,
you will be
is.
Encouraged to help others find their number and unlock deep and meaningful truth in their lives. However, However, you'll cringe every time they say it's a dumb idea for a podcast, because you know it's not. It's a smart idea for a podcast, and you just need them to recognize the greatness in themselves so they can believe in themselves and change the world.
Yep. I'm sorry.
Also,
I need a minute.
Also, I'm going to read 6 just as a warning to Aaliyah. You will start to love Rich and Bethany and feel as if they are people you can trust when it comes to all things Enneagram. If any particular guest contradicts one of the hosts, you might get salty with them in your mind.
Oh, yeah. That is a good warning.
Oh, my gosh. This is so funny.
What do we think? I kind of feel like my argument is this is a 9 review because it's merging with every number.
Yeah. And it just has the perspective of every number. Like, yeah. But also the title is Overflowing Enthusiasm That I Hope... ... I can't read the rest. So I don't know that overflowing enthusiasm describes nines, though.
Maybe the... Who knows what comes after hope?
I hope it goes away because it's interrupting my inner peace.
Exactly. All right. Well, we want to move fast here, so I'm going to read... Well, you read. Read the one from... Let's go back to where we left off.
July 23rd?
Yeah.
Some chill Enneagram. I have some chill about the Enneagram, but the show is enough goofy fun to keep me listening anyway. And that's from A.K. Behringer? I don't know.
Behringer? I know that person.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, they're chill about the Enneagram. That feels like a...
It's like a 5, like... Not too into it, but like kind of into it.
Or 9, maybe.
A 9, yeah.
Is everybody a 9?
Everyone's a 9.
Everyone that reviews it is a 9.
Yeah, if anyone is chill, they're just a 9.
They're just keeping the peace.
If everyone manages to review our podcast, they're a favorite person and therefore a 9.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That's how it works. We
the
rank
number
them.
One best number on the Enneagram.
Yep.
I'd agree.
All right. What's next,
okay.
Bethany?
Next one is Fun and Unchilled from Middle Casey. I know who that is. Super fun podcast by people who are obsessed with the Enneagram but who don't take themselves too seriously. A great combo. I know the type of this person.
What
this is
it?
Casey Haas, and she's a 5.
5, okay.
So we don't have to type her, but we do have to say that she's awesome, and she's my friend, and shout out to Casey.
Nice. Hey, I forgot to mention with the list of reasons one, that could also be a 5 because they make exhaustive lists.
Oh, true. Yeah, good point.
All right.
We're doing a great job of typing that person.
Yeah. They're definitely a 9 or a 5.
Uh-huh. Definitely.
What's next?
Okay, super fun podcast about ... from J.A. Dugan. This podcast happened at the perfect time for me. I started getting really into the Enneagram. Now I'm obsessed. The hosts are fun and funny and personable. Seem like people you'd want to hang out with. Then there's a complaint. I don't want to read that. So
they want more episodes.
They want more episodes. Yeah.
On why 4s are the worst. So
yeah. So would a 4 say that though?
Yes.
I feel like a 4 would.
Yeah.
Oh,
4s
but
would
then
be
it
like,
says,
we're
but really
the worst.
Aren't. Oh yeah, but really aren't when you consider Vincent Van Gogh or something.
Okay.
So that's a 4 definitely.
Okay. Nailed it.
All right. One more. Let's do one more.
One more. This one is called arm flexing emoji, face wearing sunglasses emoji, thumbs up emoji from Shawnteresting. And it says, I mean, what else can I say? If I could give this 2 stars, I would. If this was a scale of 1 to 2 stars.
7.
Yeah, 7. Too many emojis.
But that's a 5-star scale. So all the way, baby. For lovers of the Enneagram, hearty chuckles and overall good times. Does not promote illegal drug use in
7.
Any way so far.
Drugs on their mind.
Yep, this is
lots
a 7.
Of jokes. Yeah, that's a 7.
For sure. Love it.
All right. Well, you guys, if we typed your review, tell us if we're right in another review from someone else's account.
Yes.
And then we'll type that review as well.
It's never ending.
Definitely. All right. Yeah. Well, let's get into it, Aaliyah. We want to know this is the whole reason we have you on, is because we know it's gotten bad. Your obsession with the Enneagram has gotten bad, like too bad. Like, you're too obsessed.
It's a problem. It's a problem.
It's a problem. So tell us about that. How bad has it gotten?
I can admit that.
Yeah.
I hope anyone into the Enneagram can admit it. We're going to get some fun people to admit it eventually, but we'll start with Aaliyah, who's also a fun person. I feel like I should clarify.
Especially with all of the four bashing, I feel like there has to be some of that.
Fours.
Yeah, you know, you need to start classifying everybody. And I know we're not supposed to type people, but come on, we all type people, right?
That's what we do here.
Yeah, so I've already worked through, like, everybody in my family, and then I type my dog, and, you know, and I'm typing all the people on Twitter. And
what's your dog?
My dog's a 6'7".
Nice.
It has a wing.
For sure. For sure has a wing. And
is
he's
a small
he's
dog?
Moving towards stress right now, because he's in his kennel, so he doesn't bother me and bark. Oh. But, yeah, he's a Border Collie Australian Shepherd mix.
Okay.
So he's super smart, but, like, also, like, really anxiety written. Aww. Yeah, like, he has random, he's afraid of onions. And, like, if I'm peeling an onion in the kitchen, he, like, freaks out, stuff like that. It's just random.
Wow.
But then he has that fun 7-wing, too, so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely 6'7".
That's awesome.
I wonder what a 6'5" would even be like.
For a dog.
For a dog.
A dog that likes to sniff a lot.
Yeah,
sniff
like and investigate and like follow
watch
trails. And,
yes.
Yeah. That makes sense. I could see that. Dogs, they're like people too.
Totally.
Yes, they are. They have motivations.
Definitely. Well, Aaliyah, are fours really that bad? This is one of the big things I've been looking forward to about having a four. Because I'm a four, and it feels like we just had three episodes in a row where fours got a bunch of crap.
That's not true.
A little bit true.
There was mainly the one episode where fours got a bunch of crap.
Well, that was, to me,
was easiest on fours. I feel like, first of all, in the first episode, fours got put smack in the middle
Which is the worst thing that could ever happen to a four.
Brilliant and
it's
beautiful.
Ridiculous and wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, how dare you?
Yeah.
Because we should be either, like, adored or like,
hated.
You know, we have to make, like, some sort of visceral impression on people. If we're just, like, meh, right in the middle, it just felt like that was just vindictive.
There's also just the fact that Russell Moore keeps coming up and people are like,
oh, yeah,
for some reason disappointed that he's a four.
That's so true.
He's too good. He's too good for us. Is that
no? But I like Russell Moore. How is he a four?
I know. It's terrible.
That's the line.
Oh man.
I'm sorry.
Aaliyah, do you feel this from people in your life?
I think they humor me. I think fours, like, the people that love them kind of humor them because there is sort of that, like, you know, intensity and drama and moods and, like, all the stuff that goes with it. And so, like, I'll hear people talking about fours and I'm like, that's horrible and wrong. And we are special and amazing. You wouldn't even have, like, all the art and all the beauty. But then I'm also like, oh gosh, we're insufferable. Like, we're also the worst. And sometimes I have a lot of friends that are fours that are writers and artists, and I adore them. And then I'm also like, gosh, we're like, am I that annoying? And the answer is probably yes. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of great things about fours and, you know, but
how
I also
react?
Understand.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I understand, like, from the outside looking in on a four, how that can look.
Yeah, yeah. How do you react when someone tells you to stop being so emotional?
I think they know better than to say that to me now.
I think you're right. I think people who know fours well.
Yeah.
Even if they don't know the Enneagram.
Right.
They kind of know that person well enough to not say that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I have had someone say that to me, like, in the last 5 years, like, once, and it...
Mm.
It was noteworthy enough for me to still remember it.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. Yeah.
Like,
was it someone close to you?
It was someone I was working with.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was like,
That would hurt me deeply, too, if someone said that to me.
It was really hard. It was the worst part about it. And, Aaliyah, I don't know if you can relate to this, because this is a little more common. But, like, there's that thing where you're trying, you think you're doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you think you're restraining yourself pretty well, and you find out that other people don't see it the same way. But yeah. I was really trying to be logical. Like, really trying to be like Spock. I felt like Spock on Star Trek. And they were like, would you calm down
a little? Oh, no.
I feel like your feelings are taking over here. And I was like,
no.
I think I started yelling at that point.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You're all, you want to see feelings take over?
Yeah.
I'll show you.
Feelings.
That's funny. You know,
I relate to that too, though.
Yeah.
I'm an extremely emotional person.
I think, I don't know. I feel like feelings get a bad rap a lot of times. Like, I think we're so prone to be like logical is best and, you know, unemotional is best, and we make the best choices in that. But I don't know. I feel like there's something to be said about redeeming people that are emotional or, I don't know. Like, it can be extreme. Yeah. I think, you know, maybe some of the stuff that I'll read towards like fours is always like, you feel too much and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And I think that, you know, we can get for sure carried away from, you know, with them, and there can be a healthy balance. But I also think like, there's a lot to be said about people that are in touch with their emotions and do have that vulnerability. And
yeah.
I used to think like, oh, my tenderness is such a liability in this world because I just feel everything really, really strongly. And I've realized like over time, there's a lot of people that feel things really deeply. I think we've been conditioned a lot of times not to show that part of ourselves, especially because it translates as weakness in our culture, you know?
Yeah.
And, but I think sometimes you see those people that do, they go first, and they are, you know, maybe lead with their emotions a little bit, but I think it gives permission sometimes for other people to tap into that emotional side of themselves that they maybe hide or won't discuss with people because,
or want to avoid.
Right. Because you get people that are like, oh, we discount your emotions. You're being too emotional. We need to look at it from this way. And I think emotions bring a valuable way of looking at things to the church, to workplaces, to the family. I mean, it's not all negative, you know?
That's, yeah, totally. And it all comes down to how they're being used, right?
Right,
because
totally.
There are two things that fours are very good at doing with their emotions.
Right.
One is like giving other people permission to have those emotions, which you just talked about, which is great.
Yeah.
The other is manipulating people.
Totally.
I don't know if you do this, but I do that unconsciously. Like,
yeah.
I don't realize I'm doing it until it's worked. And I feel this
inherent... I am the puppet master.
Yeah, well, I don't feel that. I feel shame immediately, right? Like, the minute it's worked, I'm I feel a little gross about this.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing where fours get a bad rap, because they maybe should. Because, like, you realize, like, there's that thing where, you know, you're having an argument with someone and then they start crying. And you're like... what, we're supposed to continue having a logical argument now?
Right, totally.
And I feel like I've done a version of that.
You start crying.
In the context of my marriage, for sure.
Yeah.
I do think that that's like, that is so much of the beauty that fours bring to the world, is a lot of other types, like, want to avoid certain emotions, like, whether you just don't want to, like, you want to detach from emotions, or you only want to focus on positive emotions, or you need to be overly optimistic because you feel like that's what other people need. But fours, like, teach us to acknowledge and deal with the things that we maybe want to avoid, like the dark things that we actually need to sit with and deal with.
Right.
Yeah. And I will say, like, this is something I've realized is my superpower, is like, I am somehow able, not somehow, I mean, I know how I'm able to. Let's do it. Like, I bring up my dad's death or my first marriage and divorce.
Right.
Like, within the first 15 minutes of meeting people. And I almost never regret it.
Yeah.
And I have yet to find the answer to the question of why not.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, right now is really hard for me, Aaliyah, and maybe you can relate to this. Like, my son is 3 years old, and we haven't, like, explained everything to him.
Right.
So there's that feeling of, like, wait, what if he just overhears me say my first wife?
Yeah, right.
And suddenly wants to know what that is?
Yeah.
Like, And then has all of the natural questions that come after that. So we're trying to figure out how to address that ASAP because we know I'm continually blurting it out. So we need to figure that out. But I mean, he literally listens to this podcast with me. So
does he?
This will be the icebreaker right here.
That's right? Amazing. Like,
wait, yeah. What is this?
Yeah, exactly. Is that you talking about me?
No, my other 3-year-old son.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, it's like a really cool thing to see. I was hosting a small group and I started sharing about that. And then people start going around sharing like really intimate stuff. And my feeling is like you sort of break the ice in that way.
Right.
Magic happens.
I think that too. I mean, I think it's interesting for a 4 that has such a strong, like, I mean, for me, there's such a strong sort of shame center there of like, everything that's lacking, everything that's deficient, every way I don't belong, like that's all present in my identity and things that I'm dealing with. But then there's also this comfort in that too. Like, you know, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and I started writing about it online. I mean, I probably have thousands of emails over the years because a lot of people are dealing with similar things but can't talk about them because of their work, or they can't talk about them because of their family, or they can't talk about them because their church, or... And so I have these like intimate confessions from people about the things that they're dealing with and stuff. And they feel extremely open and vulnerable to share those things because I'm pretty honest about, I mean, the same with my kids are older, but my kids, you know, they know all about mental illness and they know about suicidal ideation. And they, I mean, we've talked about all of the things and, you know, people are like, how do you talk to your children about this and that? And I think I talk that way with everybody. There's sort of this openness about like, these are the dark things in life and we can discuss them and we can process them and we can be like, that's part of the beauty, I think, of 4s is that we are okay with that connection. We're okay with that, like, you know, talking about all the hard stuff. And I do think that that honesty is an invitation to people. I found that, you know, so many people that I would have zero idea were struggling with anything. I mean, they look put together and they're, you know, will come and pull me aside and say, hey, I read your post about anxiety and like, I totally know how that feels, or, you know, just, yeah, I think that there's a gift in that. So,
yeah, I've had that experience so many times and I feel like it's a moment where you're like, this is what I'm for.
Right. Totally.
You know?
Yeah. And then it feels redemptive. Like I think because my tendency is kind of towards despair and like darkness. And so because I know that that's present, I have a strong tendency towards depression, you know, both because I have bipolar disorder, but also, you know, just as a 4, like there are times when I'm like, wait, is this bipolar or is this Enneagram 4? Like it's that, you know, I'm like, there's such highs and lows and moods. And, you know, there was a time when I was like, I think I'm just Enneagram 4. And I went off my meds and then my psychiatrist was like, no, like you're not just Enneagram 4. You're bipolar. You need to be on an antipsychotic. And I was like, oh, okay. I get it now. It's a little more intense, but I do think that like in that process of looking at that sort of the highs and the lows that we go through and the things like, that there's just value. There's like value in being able to say the despair that we feel or the sadness that we feel or the darkness that comes, you know, close to us. Like we're not alone in that. And I think especially for like my faith, I needed a God that could sit with me in the dark. I needed to know that there was a God that could meet me when I feel like I don't want to live anymore. I needed a God that could, you know, and so in that process of reckoning with like, what does that look like to have faith, to even have joy, to have hope, and also like struggle with despair? How do I keep fluent? And so, you know, I talk a lot in my book about like, how do we keep fluent in this language of hope, right? How do we have that in this world where everything we're hearing and everything that is, you know, can be very different. And I think the 4's strength is that they can sit with that darkness and with that sadness and they can still seek beauty. And I think 4's do that really, really well. Yes. And so that's the redemptive part of it.
Yay. 4's are amazing. Don't hate us.
Yeah. That made me feel really good.
Yeah. There's good stuff too. There's good stuff.
Well, let's do our next segment. I have no good transition other than our next segment is called Which Childhood Wound Are We Most Likely to Give Our Kids? a real like change of pace, I think, from the depressing stuff we've been talking about.
So just how are we going to inflict damage on the next generation?
Yeah. This is a funny one because when we were talking to you about like what are you passionate about, and one of the things you said was you're a parent.
Yeah.
And I thought we have to talk about parenting and the Enneagram. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, how do we make this funny?
Childhood wounds.
And ironically, like the thing that my wife and I joke about, and this is a little bit inappropriate, but also just reality. We often joke about, just out of a dark humor, mm-hmm. What is the childhood womb we are giving Atticus?
Right.
Yeah, totally.
When we're feeling really dark, we'll frame it like, which Enneagram number do we want him to be, and what wound does that mean?
Oh my gosh.
Now, we would never do that. That's terrible. We would not do that. But
I've had similar conversations with just one of my friends who has a baby, and how, what messages does she need to explicitly give her child so that they don't turn out X number that she doesn't want them to.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So
and
funny.
I think obviously you don't we should be really clear. You should never do that sort of like manipulated Enneagram happening thing.
Your threes are writing down like the next like book proposal idea, like how to make your child the Enneagram number you want.
Right.
It's horrible.
Instant bestseller.
We don't endorse.
If you want your child to be a three, you have to only reward them for what they did and how they how well they did it.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think that's a risk for me. Anyone else?
No, not at all.
Okay. I'm just going to go down the list and we can talk about this. Let's start back at type. Well, no, we'll go down. Type fours. These children felt abandoned by one or both caretakers, or just and can I just say that these Enneagram childhood wound lists sound so traumatic.
They do.
Yeah.
This is terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. This is not my experience. I at no point felt abandoned. Well, maybe I felt abandoned, but I wasn't remotely abandoned by my parents. But like one of the things that, it's so funny, Aaliyah. I know I'm talking a lot, but a lot
this is your type. This is your type.
Yeah, I don't have kids, so go for it.
It's so funny. It took me years of marriage for my wife to give me sort of perspective on my own life. Not to say like your parents did something wrong, but like your parents are extremely different than my parents and my friends' parents and any parents I've ever known in this way.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the way was primarily like my parents weren't all worked up about being with me all the time. Mm.
Yeah.
And also I was an only child.
Right.
Yeah.
So that left me sort of like feeling alone a lot and feeling like I wasn't seen by others.
Right.
And I turned inward as a result. That's a four.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you have that like delayed realization of childhood? Cause I literally like, seriously, the childhood wounds thing was the thing I would say. I love the Enneagram, but the childhood wounds stuff is like a nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, like one of the things that I'd read when I had read the childhood wound stuff was that it was like this feeling of feeling different than their parents, like misunderstood. So it wasn't just like you were abandoned, but it was like you couldn't relate to them completely. And I think that was sort of more what I related to with my parents. Like my mom's a two. Yep. And so she's very like, I mean, she's like the trifecta of, like she's, you know, Asian American, and then she's a two, and then she's a one. So she was very like, helpful and very kind of submissive. And I mean, she just had all of this. And I was like, not that personality at all. And then, I think there was a part of me that I admired my parents, but I didn't relate to them. And I felt like they didn't get me, you know, it's just all of that. So I think my abandonment wasn't, I mean, my parents were never, you know, they never abandoned me, but I think we just went through so many things that I felt always sort of alienated. And the result was the same. Living in my imagination.
Yeah. What about you, Bethany?
Well, I think I'm still kind of like where you were at, where I'm like, I don't know about this childhood wounds thing. Like, and I really don't know what to say about my own life. Maybe I'm just too young. Like, maybe I just need some years to figure it out. But I grew up in like a super healthy, loving home. Like, my dad's a family psychologist, and like he just, they raised us really well. We always felt safe and loved. And but like my dad's a 5 and my mom's a 2. Mm-hmm. And I'm a 5 and I have one, or no, I'm a 2.
I was like, wait, what?
No. Surprise. No, I am a 2 and I have one brother and he's a 5. So I'm like, maybe that's just what happens when you just have like a secure, healthy home. Like you just copy your parents' Enneagram numbers. I don't know. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like someone needs to make like a childhood opposite of wounds list. Because as I think about it, like there was definitely that aspect, but also my parents like really encouraged me to like lean into myself, right? Like they didn't. Like, they were really intentional about me being myself and about, no, like, helping me understand that, I don't know, just I needed to, I don't know, be independent and have my own opinions. And
yeah, mm-hmm. My parents were like that, too. Stuff. Yeah, I definitely didn't feel stifled in those ways. So,
right.
Are you guys going to answer the question of which wound are you most likely giving your kids?
Oh,
yeah. Well, I was gonna go down the list. You have to answer it too.
Oh, like, what we are giving our children? What we're inflicting
Bethany,
on them?
Bethany has
I
to
do?
Also answer
on your future child.
I have children.
Your future.
But what might you give them? So yeah. Okay. What kind of parent are you gonna be?
I've
so
literally never thought about this in my life.
If you make them a type 1, they'll feel heavily criticized, punished. Or not good
gosh.
Enough.
Okay.
Household rules feel inconsistent.
No.
They began to be obsessed with being good or not making mistakes to avoid condemnation. That's not.
I'm very consistent.
Me. is that, at some point, we're going to have to accept one of these. So this is
hard.
A really fun game of Russian roulette. But okay. Aaliyah, are you feeling anything?
Well, I have a 6, so I know that he, like, the unpredictable, the no safe plays, you know, the instability, like, I know that that's, like, there. And so that it, when you read the childhood wounds, you're like, I'm the worst parent. Like, I've created a 6, you know? But I do think, like, when I look at the 4s, the negative part, I wasn't diagnosed with bipolar disorder until 2011, 2012. So he was already 11 years old by the time I was diagnosed. And so that was 11 years of, you know, being diagnosed with depression, but not like having language for the hypomanic phases that I had and things like that. So he had this mom that was like really fun sometimes and kind of extreme. And then all of a sudden would be like depressed. And, you know, so I think that, I mean, that to me, I'm like, that unpredictable nature and all of those years makes a lot of sense it's like part of it's like he's this amazing person and I wouldn't want to change any of that, but then there's this other part that I'm like, I made him a 6. You know, like and like there's like, you know, there's anxiety that comes with that Enneagram type, and there's you know those other parts, and so I'm like, I can see those things. And then with my older kids, I was, with my other two kids, I was on medication and having therapy and, you know, had a diagnosis and had a lot more help and support. And I see their personalities as being very different. Like they weren't raised in the extremes as much. And, you know, for me with my oldest, a lot of those extremes were like extremely legalistic. Like when he was really little, like extremely, extremely legalistic. To being like very, very like hands off and free, and like we're just going to do all the fun things, you know. So that pendulum that swung, I can see like, oh my gosh, you know, totally makes sense. But then with my older one, like my other, not my older ones, my other two, I don't know, you know, like it's been interesting to watch. I think my daughter's probably a 4 also. And then my little guy, he's 9. I don't know yet. I'm hoping I don't have 2 4s, but
man, this is a fun game. This is the funnest.
It is. You all guys the should real try this. Enneagram people are like screaming.
I know. This is like, stop it. Can't do it.
Our listeners should definitely bring this up at a party or a cocktail party or some kind.
Your next family dinner.
For sure.
Well, yeah. I'm gonna keep going because I really am interested. I actually think three could happen. Like, there is a sense in which I'm always having conversations with Atticus, like, be good today, like, do good today.
No. Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to catch myself, but it's pretty like ingrained in me for some reason.
Well, that's a pretty good thing to tell your kids to do.
To be good. It's true, but I feel like sometimes, I don't know, like, there's another message, an inherent message there too. That's like,
yeah.
We'll love you more if you be good today.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. I try not to do that, but we already talked about fours. I don't think I'm doing that. Fives, these children receive no meaningful interaction, emotion, or affection from caretakers.
Oh, my gosh.
Nope, that's like that. Terrible.
So extreme.
Yeah. Sixes, what you talked about, unpredictable situation with no place to go. Not really.
Mm-mm.
Sevens, these children were deprived of nurturing or it was too soon removed.
Oh, no. I will not have a seven kid.
They handled,
if that's the problem.
They handled this lack by searching for distractions. I don't know. Probably not. Eights, I gotta find something. Eights, these children often grew up in an unsafe environment and had to mature way too soon.
No.
Eights have like all the trauma and stuff. They felt like they had to be strong to survive.
And then nines felt overlooked or neglected, mm-hmm. unimportant, or lost. Man, I guess three is the only one I remotely relate to, so that serves me right, huh? Jeez.
Is the goal to, like, raise a child that who just has no Enneagram number?
That's a great question. I think yes. It has to be, right?
I don't believe in that. I don't believe that there are people with no Enneagram number.
No, there aren't. But also, like, are there any perfect, morally perfect people? But that's what you're shooting for.
Yeah.
So you would never raise a person to be, like, you know, kind of moral. You would raise a person to be perfectly moral. And then when they fail, you give them grace, and that's fine. And I think that you handle the Enneagram the same way. There. We cracked it.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm so prepared to be a parent someday now.
All right. Let's get to the really important stuff. Let's type people and things. Let's type office, the office characters.
Mm-hmm.
Characters from The Office. I can hear everyone typing The Office character.
I know. I'm
what?
Like,
I'm not doing that.
I'm not, but.
I'm doing
me.
It. All right. Well, I heard at least one other person doing it.
Okay, it was me.
Let's start with Michael Scott. I'm a little afraid right now.
He is not a four. I just want to say
he
this.
He is a
four.
He is not a four.
There is no way.
I think you have to be honest
and admit
it.
I could see
don't
it,
think
but
he's
I want
to
hear your arguments, please.
Okay, can I just talk about the episode I watched yesterday called Money, in which he declares bankruptcy. Literally, he's on the phone with his girlfriend, and she's like, why are you having money problems? Of course, it's her fault, but whatever. And
Jan.
He literally runs out of the room.
Yeah.
To a train to run away. This is a dude who acts what he feels in every moment. Like, he is a hyper unhealthy four, but he is definitely
a four.
I don't
think he's
a
four.
I think he is actually really codependent too, which is like a super unhealthy four.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has zero boundaries with people and like thinks that he's closer to everybody than he is.
How many times has he tearfully confessed some life problem that has nothing to do with anyone other than him to Jim and Pam?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Totally. I don't want it to
Are
be
you
true.
Convinced yet?
No, I really, I'm like adamantly against that analysis.
Okay, what do you think he
I just,
is?
I feel like he's not socially aware enough to be a four. Like, he has zero idea that people like don't like him. And I'm like, fours know when people don't like them. Like, they
but
fully
even
know.
An unhealthy four?
I feel like unhealthy fours know. I don't know. Maybe not. But I don't know. I feel like he's so image conscious in a way that fours are very, I feel like fours are very socially aware of like how they are fitting or not fitting. And like, I don't think he is.
Well, what do you think he would be then? What's the counter argument?
I'm
just going
to
read about a
that.
Level. I'm going to read about a level six, four real quick.
All right.
Okay.
Gradually think that they are different from others and feel they're exempt from living as everyone else does. They become melancholy dreamers, disdainful, decadent, and sensual, living in a fantasy world. Self-pity and envy of others leads to self-indulgence and to becoming increasingly impractical, unproductive, effete, and precious.
Oh, I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'm going to need my own therapy session after this.
I think self-awareness is, there's a difference between self-involvement and self-awareness, right? And self-awareness is like very much the healthy side of four. Self-involvement is a very different thing. I think we've seen that in ourselves. Like the more self-involved you are, the less self-aware you are.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. I'm a little traumatized, but
I'm sorry.
I know.
The truth.
This has been a journey I've been on for the last few months as I've rewatched The Office.
I feel like I'm not there yet, and I don't know if I'll ever be. But I can kind of see your. I can kind of see where you're coming from. I feel a little sick.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It's sad.
It's rough. Yeah.
What about Dwight? I'm a little stumped by Dwight.
I think that Dwight is a 5.
Yeah, I think he's like a 5-wing 6.
Yeah.
Five wing six makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, because he has all this knowledge and he's insulating himself.
And he has weird specific hobbies.
Right. That's
true.
And he's against like the normal culture and
Yeah.
Yes, that's so true.
I think
he's
a 5-wing 6.
Yeah. So we don't think one. He's very like rule oriented.
No, I think that's part of his like 6, the counterphobic kind of like his wing.
Because all the rules are like safety oriented or stability oriented.
Yeah.
Yep. He might be a 6-wing 5 though.
Yeah, or 6-wing 5. One of those.
I can see it. Yeah.
Because he's all about the community. He's all about the being loyal to the community.
Yeah.
Until he's suddenly. Having a coup against Michael Scott. He goes full counterphobic.
Yeah. I definitely think he's those two numbers in some combination.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right, Pam. This feels easy because the Enea cast already gave it away.
Oh, what did they say?
2.
I don't remember. 2. I could see her being a 2 or a 9.
I could see her being a 2 or a 6.
Oh. I feel like with her relationship with Roy, she just kind of like, that was like a very, well, 9s or 2s could do that. Just go along with it.
Yeah.
It's her whole heart isn't in it, but it's like she doesn't really want to go after what she wants.
Right.
So she's just like, okay, even though he treats her badly.
Yeah.
9 is a good option for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Although she has like that artistic side that she goes to, right? So 2 goes to 4 in health. So like maybe when she's healthy, like later in her relationship with Pam.
But I also think because when she gets like later in the seasons, like more driven, she figures out what she wants to do and like gives herself a job title. That could be like a 9 going to 3.
Yeah.
In health.
Good point.
But it could also be a 2 going to 1, like with a wing 1.
Oh, a 2 wing 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Wow. This is fun, though. Jim Halpert is a mystery to me, personally.
Jim.
I think he's a 9 wing 8.
Yeah,
what?
I was going to say 9.
I think he's
a
9 wing 8. It took him forever to make a move on Pam.
Agree or not.
I mean, like, him trying to flirt with Pam took days. I mean, I'm married to a 9 wing 8.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like that makes sense to me. And then I think every once in a while his 8 comes out where he's like challenging against certain things, you know, he'll get like all.
Well, the way that I'm really glad I've been watching The Office lately because there's little things like the way that he sometimes when he wants to argue with Michael, but he just doesn't think it's worth it.
Right.
And he'll go, well, I don't think I want. And then he'll just walk away. Like literally mid sentence.
Conflict
that feels
is just too much.
Yeah. That's like such a 9 thing. It's hilarious.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Toby.
4,
right?
Oh, I just
No, why are all the worst people 4s? You guys are terrible.
His wound is like literally being inflicted on him by the office.
Oh my
like,
god.
By Michael Scott.
Yeah. He's stuck in the annex all by himself.
Yeah, he's so depressed.
He is depressed. I don't know if he's a 4. I'm going to resist everybody that's classified as a 4.
Okay, so if he's not a 4, what is he?
I don't know. He could be.
He's not a 1.
No, he
he's
could be a 6.
Not a 2.
He could be a 6-wing 5.
Oh, a 6. Yeah.
He could.
He's got like anxiety and he's all like, I don't know. He just seems all like shut in his little corner and. I don't know.
He could be a 9, actually.
Yeah, like the apathy.
Imagine
the apathy.
A 9. Imagine a 9 in HR and you get Toby.
Yeah. And how passive, I mean, so passive and apathetic and like he never sticks up for himself ever. I feel like a 4 would stick up for themselves.
He's like, you really can't do that.
In like some sort of way.
Yeah.
Okay, he's a 9.
Okay, let's talk about Kevin.
I think Kevin's a 4.
What?
I do. I think he's a 4.
I don't want anyone to be a 4, about? But Kevin is he's a 4. The worst.
Well, I mean, I will admit when I think, I don't know, I feel like he's probably a 4.
Are we talking about the same person?
I don't think Kevin is a 4. No.
Expressive, dramatic.
I feel like it's underneath, like it's like the festery.
What does Kevin need?
Kevin's a 7. He's constantly making like dumb jokes. He's not melancholy. Kevin has never been sad. Kevin
is oblivious.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, he's oblivious.
Yeah.
So you think he's a 7?
Wayne
could be a 7.
Yeah, maybe.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. Angela?
Angela definitely is a 1.
She's a 1. Yeah. Absolutely. Hardcore 1. Yeah.
1 wing 9.
I don't think she has any peacemaker in her.
No.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of characters.
I don't think
I'm
she's helpful either.
In the office.
So many. Can we do Creed?
Well, yeah, we got to do the good ones. So Ryan and Creed, I definitely want to do.
Yeah. Let's Ryan's do Creed. A 3. Oh, sorry.
Okay, Ryan's. Yeah, Ryan's a 3 for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
Maybe a 3 wing 4.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I think.
Right.
Yes.
Yep.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't want to help people.
Definitely not. He's the Caitlin Beatty of the office.
Yes.
Creed is 4, right?
Oh, I thought he was a 6.
No. Creed's not a 4.
He's like a 6 wing
cares.
Five.
A 6 cares about other people and is part of communities and organizations.
But he
Creed
keeps showing
is
up.
A literal mercenary.
Yeah. Well, maybe a 5 wing 6. Like, he's unhealthy, and he's got all that weird paranoia and anxiety. Like, he's all, like, up in his own little...
I don't
little...
even know what to say about Creed right now.
I can see him, like,
I am shocked
in a
by
bunker.
How little consensus we're reaching.
It's almost like these are fictional characters, and we're trying to get at their deepest fears and motivations.
Almost, but not really.
Weird. All right, Stanley is easy, right?
Stanley's an 8.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we're like
he's like
this
I
is
do
so
my own
dumb.
Thing.
We're getting this nowhere.
Is getting, this is getting
okay.
Stupid
what do you
now.
Think? He
All
is?
Right. Kelly, what about Kelly?
I think Kelly's a 4 wing 3. I know.
Everyone is a like a 9 or 4 on the show. I don't know. I think Kelly's like a. She's definitely in the feeling triad.
I mean, she's temperamental, she's dramatic, she's self-absorbed. Yeah. Like, with a 3 wing, she's, like, prone to being successful. And the only thing that makes me curious about her is that typically 4s don't like what everybody else likes. Like, the whole popular, you know, what is popular to everybody. But I don't know, that could be the 3 wing. I feel like she's.
But if you look at her in that office context, she still stands out even in that sense.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Just being, like, the young hip person in the... office basically, like in Scranton, she's like the hipster of Scranton.
Right, totally.
I think you're right. I think she's a 4 wing 3.
Yeah.
Why are there so many 4s on this?
I don't
show?
Know. It's the worst.
That is crazy. The know what? That is the recipe for a cringe comedy.
That is.
Just
oh my gosh.
A bunch of 4s in a room.
It's the worst.
Together. Wow. That's and you know what? I will say this. I've been in office situations that have confirmed that. Anyway, hey, let's go to our next segment. It's called Can We Make Enneagram Slang Happen?
That is the question. Uh-huh.
What do you guys think? Does anyone have one they want to use? Because I have one from a user submitted Enneagram.
Yeah, tell us what that is.
All right, you ready?
I'm ready. Yep.
Enneafam.
Yeah, it was.
This
it
is
was
amazing.
Katie Pie.
Enneafam has to happen because this is a real thing. Those people you know and love in your life that you feel safe to talk about the Enneagram with.
Obsessively.
Yeah.
That's an important element.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we good with that? We're going to make it
happen. I'm good with it. We're going to make it happen. Sweet. I'm turning my whole like office into my Enneafam.
And can we call our listeners Enneafam?
Heck, well, not if they're ones and they leave really critical ratings.
Yeah. Well, they're not listening.
You know what?
Not anymore.
We've lost them already. Yeah.
Unless they're just really fascinated by what
they were like,
but they're horrified.
Going to do what? I can't listen to
that's
this.
That's not how you use it.
No.
I have a friend that's a one and also is an Enneagram like coach or whatever.
Yeah.
Is like certified. And I just immediately started off the conversation with, I feel like I owe you an apology.
I know.
For like doing this show. And he was like, what are you talking about? Yeah. He's a very healthy one. And I told him about the review and how I just mapped that onto every like Enneagram expert ever. And I said it was definitely a one though, because, and then I explained the heart emoji at the end.
Right.
Like,
uh-huh.
And he said, oh yeah, that
formation.
Is definitely a one.
Right.
Right.
Anyone who would like say a lot of mean things, not be able to restrain themselves from bringing
and
up
then,
Larry
and put a heart at
emoji.
The end.
And put a heart. Yeah. I know we've talked about this like too many times on the show. But.
It feels like a deep wound. Like maybe a
it is.
Childhood
it's,
wound. Kind
it
of.
It's
it
my childhood wound.
Yeah. Mine too.
All right. We made Enneagram Slang happen. Awesome.
Yeah, we did.
Everybody. Enneafam. Go out and
like
tweet that joke.
Tweeting it.
Yep.
Bleep you, Enneathought. That's our next.
Enneathought.
I have a good one. It's from today.
All right.
Yeah, I have a good one from today too.
I think everyone started to be really mad today.
They were positive and encouraging for a while. Like the last couple days.
Yeah, Enneathoughts have this habit of asking rhetorical questions that sound like you are the dumbest person.
So passive aggressive.
On Earth.
Yeah, right.
So here's mine. What would happen if you stopped trying to understand yourself today? Would your world fall apart?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, mine's the same formula.
What is it?
What would happen if you stopped striving to be loved and appreciated today? Would your world fall apart? Like, no.
No, it would.
And
no,
I don't think that it would.
When did we ever say that?
Who thinks that? Yeah.
Also, I just point out that mine is an actual good thing to do? Why would I stop understanding myself? Here's
right?
the thought. If
that's the whole point of the Enneagram is to understand yourself.
Exactly. Maybe I just need to delete this stupid
newsletter. Okay, but
anyway,
what Enneagram number is Enneathought?
we haven't asked this question yet.
I think it's Enneagram number Party Penguin.
Which is obviously a one.
Oh my
goodness.
Aaliyah, do you have any that you
there was one, it was like, oh, let me see if I can find it. Hold on, I wrote it down. Oh, here. It was the old one. It was general insight for reflection. One way to work on yourself is by being present in the body. Another way is by expanding the heart. A third way is by quieting the mind. The wise person finds a way to work on all three at the same time.
Oh my gosh.
I was
gosh.
Like, what in the world is happening? Why am I subscribed to this? I think that was...
Sure. I'll just do that. Yeah.
When you're older, you'll finally figure out how to just like juggle.
Here's the way to do all of these things.
Wait, what is it? Quieting your mind?
Yeah, quieting the mind. A third way is by quieting the mind.
What are the other two ways?
Something about your body.
Expanding the heart.
Expanding the
quieting
heart.
Quieting the mind. And being present in the body.
Present in the body. What even? I don't know.
Well, this has been Bleep You, Enneathought.
Yes.
Let's do our next segment. It's called Let's Tell Every Number How to Parent Their Kids.
Oh, this is dangerous.
I'm especially qualified for
this. I think what we'll do is a round robin.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Terrifying.
Or maybe we should do.
Make me do this?
No, but Bethany, why don't you host this segment and we'll alternate? Because we both have a lot of advice to give.
Yeah,
I'm extremely wise in this area.
I mean, you know, I will give advice even when I'm not qualified to do so.
Just use your experience
really
with
helpful.
Your dog Rocky and
my dog.
I actually have gotten really good parenting advice sometimes from people that aren't parents because they have an outside perspective. So
good.
I wouldn't discount it.
Okay, Bethany, do you want to play?
Great. Sure.
All right. I guess. Well, let's start with Aaliyah at one. Aaliyah, what do you think?
Oh, so they're like the perfectionist, the achiever, critical.
Yeah.
I would say maybe like just realizing that there's more than one way to do things. Like there's more than one way to fold towels, or there's more than one way to write a paper, or, you know, so that their kids can express themselves, maybe. I think
that's good.
Ones tend to be maybe a little bit more restrictive in that. So embracing maybe whimsy and some spontaneity and imperfection sometimes. Letting the house get dirty, like to do a craft or something.
I'm gonna suggest improv for Enneagram ones.
Ooh, yeah.
Because improv is gonna help you parent, because you have to yes and every dang stupid thing your kid does.
Yes.
Seriously. I had someone tell me one time they applied improv rules to parenting, and I was like, what a terrible idea. Wait, that's brilliant. Because if you can yes and them into what you want,
yeah,
they're always happy. Like,
that makes sense.
Today, I was so proud of my wife. Today I was like, Atticus, get to the bathroom to brush your teeth right now. One, two, three. Doing that one count to three thing. And he's just staring at me like, I don't want to. And Jennifer was like, he likes to see how fast he can get there if you count upwards. So
oh
we were
gosh.
Like, let's see how fast you can get it. Literally,
yeah,
his
totally.
Whole disposition changed. And he was like,
you
booking
tricked
it.
Him.
He yeah. was booking it to the bathroom. He made it in five. It was awesome.
Wow.
That's awesome. Record to beat for next time.
Yep. All right.
I want to go next.
Go
twos.
Next for twos.
Okay, this is probably the only one I have an actual idea for. But if you're a two parent, just try not to, like, emotionally need your children. Like, make sure that you're getting your needs met from other sources besides your kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is a good time to mention that all of this advice is good for everyone.
Right,
right, totally. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I can definitely, I feel like I should live up to that as well.
right.
Enneagram threes. Yeah, your kid, this is similar maybe, but like your kid is not going to make you proud all the time. They're going to make you look like a failure. So you have to get used to looking like a failure.
Yeah, oh, that's good.
And I would even say, like, just make that a discipline.
It.
Make
right.
that a discipline. Like, just tell your kid it doesn't matter what you look like outside of the house, but that they just need to, like, I don't know, do the right thing. Anyway.
Yeah. I think also for threes, like, modeling their own failure, like, being willing to say,
good,
I messed this up and, like, I need forgiveness and... I don't know. Like, I think that's an important part aspect for their kids to be able to see them fail.
Yep.
As well.
Yep. Good point.
Yeah.
Okay. I just got a text message that says, hey, try not to laugh so loud. Flannery woke up.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
So that's my parenting advice for threes as well.
don't laugh so loud.
Don't laugh so loud when you're recording your Enneagram podcast. Aaliyah, what about number four?
Oh, this is the hard one, right? I mean, I think stability is really big for fours, and like you were saying with the two, that unhealthy two part of needing your kids too much. I think having boundaries with, like, I think we're so expressive and we're so creative and we have so many feelings that sometimes it can overwhelm our kids. Like, they could feel responsible for them. And so I think knowing those boundaries of health, like, to not load all of that on our children. Especially when we're not feeling as happy or, I don't know.
Totally. That's good.
Yeah.
Oh,
is it my turn?
Your turn. Five.
Sweet. I have a five parent. So,
how do you wish they'd parented you?
Oh gosh.
I'm just kidding. How did they parent you well?
Okay. There's no way to say anything without it sounding like I'm subtweeting my dad. Love you, Dad. He can come on the podcast later and defend himself.
And he will.
Yeah. But I mean, fives probably need to, like, emotionally engage with their children more.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like, tell them you love them more than you probably are comfortable with or think you need to.
Right.
Cool. Sixes. My wife is a six, so I can speak to this. Let them freaking play at the playground.
like, they're not going to die.
Quit telling them to be careful. Because every time you tell them to be careful, they think, oh, wait, am I about to get hurt? And that's not what that's not like the ongoing message you want to put in their head.
Right.
Sixes are awesome, but that's a thing they do that I don't like.
Yeah.
Sevens.
Sevens are like the fun parents that do all the stuff. But I think that for some kids, like, all of that positivity could maybe make them feel unseen or unheard if they're not. Like, if they are going through something rough, I think I've seen seven parents that sometimes are like, it's all going to work out. And I'm like, oh gosh, that kid is like, need somebody to sit there with, they need a four to sit there with them in their pain. But then also just like maybe slowing down, like they're not probably great with the mundane ordinary. So maybe slowing down, staying home sometimes, like, I don't know. I feel like if I had a seven parent, I would be exhausted.
Bethany, eight.
Eights. Eights. I feel like I always say the same thing for eights, which is like, be vulnerable, like lean into your, nurturing and vulnerable side, because eights can be extremely nurturing.
Cool. Nines, well, I don't even know, to be honest. I don't, you guys help me
be
out
engaged.
With nines.
Engaged.
Yeah.
Be engaged. Be present. Yeah, be present, be engaged. Oh, yeah, I don't know. My mom's a nine, so I feel as awkward as you did, Bethany.
Well,
but
my
you
husband's
have to do
a
it
because
I did it.
But let me tell you a very real thing that I think my mom and I have probably talked about and are aware of at this point. Fours are very out of sight, out of mind. Aaliyah, do you get that sometimes?
Yeah.
And nines are very, I'm not going to call. Like, they'll call me if they want to. And my mom and I, like, literally never talk on the phone, almost ever. We FaceTime sometimes with the kids, but, like, we call when there's something to talk about, like, the trip coming up or something. We love each other very much, and we're extremely present, and we have a lot of great conversations in person.
Yeah.
But she lives across the country, and it makes me really sad, to be honest, because I feel really guilty. I feel a lot of shame about it. And I'm sure my mom feels a lot of like ambivalence about it. Right. Like in terms of like whether she should reach out or not.
Yeah. This is really sad.
I know it's, I'm sorry. It got really deep, but, and my mom will listen to this too. That's the other thing about it.
I'll travel and stuff, and I will forget to like call my family the whole time I'm gone. But then I, on my way home, like I'm dying to see them, and I love being home.
Yep.
It's my favorite place. But my husband's a nine, and I think he kind of, he tends to be apathetic, but I think he also tends to sort of get his feelings hurt, because I'll be like, I'm gone, and then I never touch base, and he's like, remember me? And I'm like, of course, you're like my favorite person in the world, but also I didn't call you for 4 days.
Yep.
So.
Totally, totally, that's the way it is. So my advice to nine parents is, when your kids are like away from home, call them. And when they are in home, like actively seek them out. They probably want to spend time with you.
Yeah.
Cool. My mom played Uno with me a lot when I was a kid, and it was awesome. Some of the best memories I have are my mom playing Uno with me.
I love it. It's
awesome. Wow, we just made so many people better parents.
We did. We sure did.
Changing the world.
Yeah, we are.
We have no time left, but I'm going to do life advice anyway, because last time we blew off life advice, I just regretted it. So, Aaliyah, what's something you need help with? Bethany and I, because we are not Enneagram experts.
Yep.
For some reason, we will help you with that through the lens of the Enneagram.
Okay. Yes. All right. That's good. Let's see. What do I need help with? So I'm in the process of gathering endorsements. And for my book, and I have no three wing, so I have like almost no success drive, like almost just none.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me because I'm like, I don't necessarily want like the most, I mean, that's the four, like I don't really want the most famous person. I want like these deep, meaningful connections to me. So I'm trying to figure out like, how do I navigate that part? Like, do I stay true to kind of my own, I don't know, there was a big thread on Twitter, we were talking about it, because I'm like, I want people that I value, and I value their opinion, but a lot of the people that I really value their opinion, like, are the really authentic, in my mind, people that are really authentic, who also have just itty-bitty little, like, hey, I don't know. So I don't know.
What are the professionals telling you?
I haven't gotten the list from them, but I'm thinking they're going to be all like New York Times bestselling authors, you know, like, you know, the bigger, the more famous, the wider name recognition, the better. And I like, there are some people that I totally respect that, that fall into that sphere and that might be willing to endorse me, but it's just, it's an interesting tension because as it gets from the writing stage to the marketing stage, I have almost no, I have zero marketing savvy. And I also have almost no interest in, like, I want my book to help people. And I think it, you know, could do good in the world, but I also, I'm like, I just need a little three wing to like get this thing to take off. And I just don't have it. So
I can be your little three wing.
Right. Yeah, Richard can help you.
Yeah, this is definitely the big difference between us because I don't have an issue with this. I'm like, can I get Al Mohler? Beth Moore, will she do it?
Russell Moore, hey.
Russell Moore,
any
hey.
Of the Moores.
Any of the Moores. Yeah. So my first advice to you is email all the Moores. That's a no-brainer.
Yes.
I mean, my thing so is funny. there's like, you've done the book, you've done the work, you've
right.
done the authenticity thing.
Yeah.
And now you really do like need to listen to other people help you with the thing you don't excel at.
Right.
Unfortunately, authors are tasked with that other piece, and that's gonna just be, it's gonna be like if I were asked to like do accounting or something.
Right, like, that's how it feels. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, but can I say this? If I were tasked with doing accounting, I would immediately figure out who can I pass this on to.
Right.
That actually knows how to do it and like wants to do it. And that is ultimately my advice to you.
Yeah.
As much as you can, whether it's formal or informal, delegate that crap, which is to say, ask people who should endorse your book, ask them for their emails, ask them to introduce you to them.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And let those people do a lot of the heavy lifting as much as possible.
Yeah. That's good advice.
Yeah. I second that. 'Cause I don't know what else to say.
That sounds good.
How do we end the show? I've forgotten. Oh, that's.
We don't
I guess
really
we
have
just
to.
Kind of
we
fade
have
out.
Well,
you ended song.
Bye. No, we say thank you.
Wish we ended like the Gilmore Guys podcast and we just sang Lee. we just sang that song. What's that song called?
I don't know.
Lean on me when you're not. No, that's not it.
No.
Wait, is it just the Gilmore Girls theme song?
Where you lead.
Oh, yeah. I will follow. This took a turn.
Anywhere that you tell me to. And you need me to be with you. I will follow. Where you lead. Oh, perfect.
Wow, that was the best.
That was really good.
That was
good.
The best. Yeah.
That was awesome. This has been No Chill Enneagram. It is hosted and produced by Richard Clark and Bethany Perkins. Edited by Richard Clark. Theme music is Max Flashback by Lee Rosevier. We want to hear from you. If you're an Enneagram number 9, 4, 2, or 7, feel free to leave a review on iTunes. If you are a 6, please only do this if you trust us. If you are an 8 or a 1, please do not leave us a review on iTunes. But you can feel free to reach out to us on Twitter, where we'd love to be challenged by you or hear from your overflowing inner critic. Our Twitter handle is @NoChillEnneapod. That's @NoChillEnneapod. Enneagram number 5. Please include us in your next exhaustive list of hilarious podcasts. And 3s, you can just give us credit after we inspire you to do whatever amazing thing you're going to do next. If you are a number 1 through 9 and you haven't already, subscribe to this podcast wherever podcasts are subscribable.